It's nearly 12 o'clock and time for the KMXT Midday Report. Thank you for listening to KMXT on 100.1 FM. It's your public radio station broadcasting from beautiful downtown Kodiak, Alaska, where it's 43 degrees under fair skies. Southerly winds to 16. Been a little gusty today. Partly sunny skies for the rest of the day and high near 47. South winds continuing to 10 through the night and into tomorrow. Partly cloudy skies overnight and mostly sunny skies tomorrow. Coming up on the Midday Report, a pint-size art exhibit by the Kodiak Maritime Museum has an inspiration from a Mexican tradition. Kodiak's gaming community has a new hangout. And the ferry board gets into long-term planning. Those stories and more after national headlines.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Lakshmi Singh. The lone suspect in the Brooklyn subway mass shooting is now in custody. Police say they still don't know why he did it, but NPR's Quil Lawrence reports Frank James will face a federal terrorism charge for yesterday's morning rush hour attack that injured more than 20 people.
New York City Police Commissioner Keyshawn Sewell says after a nerve-wracking 30-hour manhunt, 62-year-old Frank R. James is in custody.
Literally, hundreds of NYPD detectives worked doggedly during the last 30 hours to bring this together. We hope this arrest brings some solace to the victims and the people of the city of New York.
Those wounded and injured in the shooting and the panicked rush that followed included several children. Authorities flooded public airwaves and media with surveillance pictures of James, and after a tip-line call, he was apprehended without incident in Manhattan. Police said they had collected evidence including the gun, a rented U-Haul van, and the clothes James is seen wearing during the alleged attack. The motive is still unclear. Investigators are still reviewing social media posts linked to the suspect. Quil Lawrence, NPR News, New York.
Russia may launch another major military offensive in eastern Ukraine at any moment. The Pentagon repeating that warning today as the U.S. and its allies watch Russia's military movements. A senior defense official said earlier that forces were gathering and staging areas on the Russian side of the border and then moving in eastern Ukraine's Donbas region. Ukrainian forces are not only bracing for intensified assault from Russia, but also on guard against Ukrainian separatists in the region who are pro-Russian. Pentagon spokesman John Kirby says the Biden administration is authorizing an additional $800 million in security assistance to Ukraine.
The United States has now committed more than $3.2 billion in security assistance to Ukraine since the beginning of the Biden administration, including approximately $2.6 billion since the beginning, just since the beginning of their unprovoked invasion on February 24th.
Millions of Ukrainians have fled the country since the start of the invasion. The war caused the fastest-growing refugee crisis in Europe since World War II. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention has extended an order requiring masks on planes, trains, and transport hubs. NPR's Ping Wong reports the order was extended as coronavirus cases have begun to rise again.
Anyone traveling on planes and public transportation will be required to mask up through May 3rd. That's because the CDC has extended their order requiring face masks during travel. The order has been in place for over a year and was set to expire on Monday. The CDC says they've extended the mask mandate to assess the potential impact of rising cases on severe illness and healthcare capacity. In the past month, the BA.2 subvariant of Omicron has taken over. And in the past 2 weeks, COVID cases have been ticking up in states in the Northeast and Southwest. Ping Huang, NPR News.
The Dow closes up 344 points. You're listening to NPR News.
There's a new pint-size exhibition on display at Kodiak's downtown brewery. As KMXT's Kirsten Dobroth reports, the Kodiak Maritime Museum's exhibition is called Waterhaul and features art inspired by and for the commercial fishing industry.
Katie Bursch is an artist from Homer. She's been an Alaska commercial fisherman for more than 3 decades with her family in Bristol Bay. She says the term water haul refers to a net that comes up empty, but there's also a more somber parallel.
In the area that I've been set netting, it seems like someone drowns, not quite every year, but almost every year, unfortunately. And so a lot of times with our set net skiffs and that, we're looking for the body, basically.
Bursch created 11 small-scale dioramas for the show. They're filled with knickknacks and built out of fishing paraphernalia, like empty extra-tough boxes and a gutted single-sideband radio. And in each one, skeletons are dressed in rain gear, laughing and sharing stories on the dock. Bursch says some of her inspiration comes from the Mexican tradition known as Día de los Muertos, or Day of the Dead, when families leave out drinks and food for deceased family members in hopes that they'll visit. Bursch says her work is similarly crafty and whimsical, and it's a way to celebrate the fishermen that don't make it home.
If you got one day to come back to Earth, like, where would you go? What would you do? And I just imagine myself, the fisherman, being like, oh, I just want to go back to the cannery bunkhouse and play crib with my old friend Johnny, you know, or I just want to get on the flying bridge and get a fish call.
Waterhaul was exhibited back in December of 2020 at a gallery in Homer. Bursch says a lot of people didn't get to see it because of COVID. This time, the Kodiak Maritime Museum is showing her work at Kodiak Island Brewery on Lower Mill Bay Road. Bursch says she's hoping others in the fishing community will have a chance to see it.
That's the audience I would most want. I just feel like Kodiak is a great place for this art just because, you know, I'd like fishermen to see it.
Waterhaul is on display through the end of May. In Kodiak, I'm Kirsten Dobrath.
Kodiak's gaming community has a new space for tabletop gamers, classic video game aficionados, and Dungeons & Dragons players of all stripes. As KMXT's Dylan Simard reports, the new Emerald Game House has also tapped into the local Warhammer scene.
Last month, Thor Johnson opened the Emerald Game House, a space for tabletop gamers in the basement of the Kodiak Masonic Lodge. Complete with snacks and drinks for sale, Warhammer paraphernalia, and table space for rent, Johnson hopes it will be a new gathering point for Kodiak's gaming scene.
What our main thing here is providing the space for people to come and play and have that, because it can take quite a bit of space playing some of these games, and so not everybody has access to it.
The Emerald Game House has a large number of tables for Warhammer 40K, which is a favorite among the game house's patronage, Magic the Gathering, a card game not dissimilar to Pokemon, and classic role-playing game Dungeons & Dragons. Classic video game consoles hooked up to TVs line the walls, all of which are available for a $5 to $10 cover fee. Many tabletop gamers in Kodiak are grown men and women well into their adult lives. Often they're working parents, and many of them are active or retired Coast Guard. Johnson, an Army veteran himself, says that the presence of veterans in the tabletop gaming space is not a coincidence.
There are a lot of cases where young soldiers and sailors and airmen, they are involved in these communities, Magic the Gathering or Warhammer. And it helps, they're very therapeutic hobbies.
Describing Warhammer usually opens by comparing it to chess and then giving up. The game attempts to simulate an infantry engagement of warriors 38,000 years in the future on a tabletop map, along with vehicle support and abilities that veer on the edge of magic. It takes considerable setup time involving tape measures, meticulous placement of dozens of plastic models on an area the size of a large dinner table, and followed by several hours of rolling dice and consulting rules.
I'm a huge nerd, you know. I play with little plastic army men with my friends in my basement, you know. It's super great, but, you know, it's definitely a place where you can immerse yourself in the lore of whatever you're playing.
That's Colt Foreman, who recently won a local Warhammer tournament. He's in the Coast Guard and says that for him, Warhammer provides a much-needed break.
It's also a way to also step out of being in the military, just to relax and do something totally different. Here I am, like I said, I'm 40 years old and I'm playing with plastic miniature models. You know what I mean? Like, I'm still a kid. I'm still a Toys R Us kid. And I have a blast with it. It's great.
Those interested in finding a space for their gaming of all types in Kodiak can find the Emerald Game House at 1117 Mill Bay Road. It's closed Sundays and Mondays. In Kodiak, I'm Dylan Simard.
What's a minimum level of service that's acceptable for the state's marine highway system? That's a fundamental question a new ferry oversight board could be grappling with this year. Last year, the legislature created the Alaska Marine Highway Operations Board to make recommendations on the direction of the state ferry system. It held its first meeting in February. The board is tasked with providing input on a short-range plan for vessels, docks, and terminals, updated annually, along with a longer and more comprehensive document that steers decisions in decades to come. Board Chair Shirley Marquardt, a top ferry official under Governor Bill Walker, said the system needed to make decisions well before a long-term plan is complete.
I guess I would just want to be sure that the development of this plan, which is going to happen whether we like it or not, doesn't stop the Alaska Marine Highway System from making needed changes and being able to present those changes to the legislature, to the administration.
That longer-term planning process could take 1 to 2 years or more and could address which ports to serve, types of new ships to build, and how to operate the passenger and vehicle service over thousands of miles of Alaska's coastline. But it can also include more immediate decisions on retiring aging vessels or making repairs. Matanuska Captain Keith Hillard represents the three crew unions on the oversight board. He talked about gaining back the trust of ferry passengers by providing basic service.
For a tight budget or lean years, you have to define what the minimum level of service is to keep communities happy and supplied for medical and just having a ship touch bases with them. You know, whether it be on a monthly or a biweekly basis, I really think we need to look at that and to help formulate that long-term plan.
It's not the first long-term planning for the ferry system. A regional transportation plan nearly two decades ago resulted in the construction of fast catamarans that have since been sold. Another plan that didn't make it past the draft stage in 2014 focused on constructing new roads to connect ferry routes. In 2020, a task force created by Governor Mike Dunleavy recommended the reducing of the size of the fleet, forward funding ferry operations, and the creation of an executive board. The state has retired some of its aging vessels, and it's starting the process of replacing the 57-year-old Tustamina, which serves Homer, Kodiak, and Southwest communities out to Unalaska. Alaska built two new ferries in 2019 without crew quarters needed for longer voyages. It's adding crew quarters to one of those, the Hubbard. That should be completed in October. And most of the board sounded supportive of adding that space to its sister ship, the Taslina. But Board Chair Juanetta Ayers of Anchorage wasn't ready to make that recommendation yet.
I think we're headed down the road of doing the same thing that we've always done, which is overbuilding large vessels and not really thinking about smaller, more flexible vessels.
The board also heard from ferry passengers, freight customers, and advocates who called for increased service and building new ships. Southeast Conference Executive Director Robert Venables asked for more urgency in planning to prepare for spending ferry funding in the $1.2 trillion infrastructure bill Congress approved last year.
Really, you know, at what point can recommendations be made to construct more ferries? I see $3 million for a design to start next year, but I don't see any construction of new ferries, and our obsession should be new holes in the water, because you have $1 billion to make recommendations on, and I hope it goes towards new ferries soon.
Patricia Phillips of Pelican urged the board to consider a similar-sized and more efficient ferry to replace the ferry Leconte to service small rural communities in the northern panhandle. Seth Stewart owns Jacoby Fisheries, a seafood processing company in Pelican. He asked for regular service by a ferry that can carry vehicles.
Jacoby, you know, we ship a lot of product in and out of Pelican, supplies in, product out, people in and out on the ferry system. And we depend on that, you know, as a business, but also as a business, it's not only about, you know, the money that's coming in and out, but it's also about the people. And to do what it is that we do out in Pelican, we need the infrastructure of Pelican there. And that takes people. And often in wintertime, it's hard to get supplies in and out of Pelican without some kind of a roll-on, roll-off service.
The Department of Transportation also hopes to make some decisions about modernizing the fleet. Specifically, that means timelines for retiring the Matanuska and Kennecott, and whether to retire ferries like the Aurora and LeConte. The Marine Highway could build two new mainliners in the next decade and has to decide if those follow the same design as a replacement plan for the Tustamina. In the shorter term, the Marine Highway is looking to make dock modifications to accommodate the new Alaska-class ferries. The ferry system is also planning to restart service to Prince Rupert, British Columbia, by late June. That stopped in October 2019 over a requirement for law enforcement protection for U.S. Customs staff in the Canadian port. The board has more online meetings planned this spring, along with an in-person meeting in Ketchikan early next month. A Sitka man who spent a half hour in the ocean after his kayak capsized last weekend was rescued by a quick-thinking passerby who swam from shore and pulled him to safety. The Good Samaritan was aware of the risks, however. She's a five-year veteran of Sitka's search and rescue team. KCAW's Catherine Rose has this report.
Roman Soler moved to Sitka in February, and with spring's arrival, he's been getting a taste of the outdoors with kayaking. He went for the first time in early April, but on his second planned trip, his friends couldn't go.
Because initially we planned a group of people, but like other people were busy, and some people kind of changed their mind. So I was kind of like the only one left over. And he's like, if you want to go, you can borrow the kayak. So I borrowed the kayak from here, from him.
So around 5:30 in the afternoon on April 10th, he set out for his first solo kayaking trip in Stargaven Bay. He paddled 3 miles toward Nakwasina Sound, but as the sun dipped, he turned around to go back. As he was nearing the Stargaven boat launch area on his return trip, the water began to get a little choppy. A wave hit his kayak, dumping Soler into the ocean and swamping his boat. He tried flipping the kayak sideways to empty it.
I flip it sideways, and instead of like water going out, like even more water gets in, and now it's like 100%. Like the compartment where I sit is 100% full of water, and the compartment like behind me is like 100% full of water.
Soler estimates he was about 2,000 feet from the shore, so he tried to swim the distance.
I tried like swimming as hard as I could for maybe like 15 or 20 minutes up to the shore. But then I look back and the kayak is right next to me and nothing changed. You know, I'm like where I was, you know.
He tried swimming the backstroke too, and then he just held onto the kayak and yelled for help. At one point, a boat drove by in the distance and Soler yelled out to them, but they didn't hear him over their engine. Then, after about half an hour, Soler saw something moving toward him in the water.
And I'm thinking this could be like one of those buoys, or this could be someone's head going towards me.
It was Sheila Swanberg, and Soler was in luck. She's a five-year veteran of Sitka's search and rescue team.
She's kind of your utility knife in search and rescue. She can do a little bit of everything.
Fire Chief Craig Warren says that evening, Swanberg had been walking her dog on the path at the Stargaven Estuary.
And Sheila heard something that she dismissed as a duck. And then she heard it again and said, well, that's a weird-sounding duck. And then the third time she heard it is when she realized that there was a kayak out there.
Warren says she took off running, flagging down a car that was driving by. She told the driver to call 911, and then she tied up her dog, set down her phone, and swam to Soler's aid. She helped him swim back to shore with the kayak.
She was so brave. She like risked her life, going like this very cold water and swimming like such a long distance like towards me.
While Swanberg was responding, the fire department got a boat crew together to rescue the kayaker. But Swanberg managed to get Soler to the shore fast enough that the fire department had to trade the boat for an ambulance. They cared for Soler and took him to Mount Edgecombe Medical Center, where he was treated for hypothermia. Soler is on the mend now and incredibly thankful to Swanberg for saving him that day. He says at first he was embarrassed about the accident, but now he's hoping others can learn from his mistakes.
And maybe my mistake will actually save some other people from doing the same or like, you know, getting into a very dangerous situation.
He says in the future he probably won't kayak alone. He'll go with a group, get better gear, and maybe pick a warmer day too. Fire Chief Craig Warren says kayakers should be aware of their skill level and the weather. It was gusty on April 10th. He says Soler was lucky Swanberg had been there.
Sheila's really the hero of the day, though. You know, she just did what Sitkins do. We help each other out. She had no idea who this person was, and she didn't think twice about it. She just went in to rescue this person. She didn't have any of her response equipment. She was just being a good person.
Reporting in Sitka, I'm Catherine Rose.
Today's KMXT Local News is brought to you in part by Discover Kodiak, a one-stop source for visitor information on Kodiak and other destinations around the state. On the web at kodiak.org and at the Visitor Center in the Ferry Terminal Building at 100 Marine Way, 486-4782.
Ang NPR Balita ay hatid sa inyo ng Providence Kodiak Island Counseling Center. Para sa kaukulang impormasyon tungkol sa aming mga serbisyo, tumawag lamang sa 481-2400.
Insight Daily Radio. Author, humorist, and radio personality Garrison Keillor has been a fixture in popular culture since the 1970s. With more than 30 best-selling books and his Prairie Home Companion radio program. And he has a new book entitled Boomtown, a Lake Wobegon novel. We caught up with Garrison to chat about his new book and the creative journey that continues to bring Lake Wobegon to life.
In the course of doing the radio show, I didn't want to simply be the MC and say, please, won't you welcome Leo Kottke? I wanted to have something to do myself, and so I decided I would tell stories and invent a town called Lake Wobegon, and I would populate it with some of the people I grew up with and my relatives, changing their names to protect the innocent. So I came back to it, my childhood, as a practical matter to give myself material. I exploited my childhood, I would say, rather than come to appreciate it. I mean, I'm grateful for it now. Now I look back and I see that without it, I would have been lost up a creek. Instead, I was beside a lake.
That's author and humorist Garrison Keillor, whose new book, Boomtown, a Lake Wobegon novel, has just been released and is now available wherever books are sold. Insight Daily Radio.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Here's your Island Messenger for Wednesday. It is the 13th day of April, the year 2022. The sun rose today at 7:04. It won't set again until 9:17. That will give us 14 hours and 13 minutes of daylight, a gain of 4 minutes and 55 seconds compared to yesterday. Our record high for the state was 55. That was set in 1948. Our record low was 9 degrees, set in 1985. Currently a balmy 45 up here on Burrow Hill, 43 degrees out at the airport where they have fair skies, southerly winds to 16 miles per hour. They're calling for partly sunny skies today, high near 47, with those south winds continuing through today, tonight, and tomorrow around 10 miles per hour. For tonight, partly cloudy skies, low of 34, and for tomorrow, mostly sunny, high of 46. For Thursday night, 40% chance of rain after 1 a.m., mostly cloudy skies tomorrow night, with a low of 36, southeast winds to 15, gusting to 25. And for Friday, a little weather is going to come in. Snow is likely before 10 a.m., then rain and snow between 10 a.m. and 1 p.m. on Friday, then rain after that. High near 45, with southeast winds gusting as high as 35 on Friday. Looking at our local tides, we are just about to have a high tide here on the east side. At 12:32 p.m., they will have a 7.5-foot tide, followed by a low tide at 6:57 p.m. of 0.3 feet. Over on the west side, you have a high tide coming up at 1:12 this afternoon. That will be a 12.2-foot tide in Larsen Bay, followed by a high tide at 7:35 p.m. of 5/10 of a foot. Mariners, here's your forecast for Marmot Island to Sitkanat, Kodiak's east side offshore. Small craft advisory for today, south winds to 20, seas to 8 feet. For tonight, south 15, seas to 7 feet. And for tomorrow, south 20, seas to 6 feet. Thursday night, they're calling for southeast winds to 30, seas to 11 feet. Over in the Shelikof Strait, southeast 15 today, seas to 4 feet. For tonight, southwest 15, seas to 3 feet. And for tomorrow, southeast 20, seas to 3 feet. Thursday night, east 25, seas coming up to 5 feet in the Shelikof. Looking at our local meetings, Kodiak Island Borough meetings include the Planning and Zoning Commission work session. That's happening tonight at 6:30 p.m. in the Assembly Chambers. Tomorrow, the Assembly is having a work session. That will be happening at 6:30 p.m. in the Assembly Chambers. On Monday, the Consolidation Committee is having a regular meeting. That will be happening at 6:30 p.m. in the Borough Conference Room. And next Tuesday, the Service Area Number 1 will be having their board meeting in the Assembly Chambers at 5:30 p.m. Tuesday. The Kodiak Audubon Society will be hosting a presentation by Katie Stoner called Counting Puffins on the Kodiak Archipelago. That's happening tomorrow, Thursday the 14th, at 6 p.m. Katie is a PhD student at Oregon State University who has studied endangered seabirds in Hawaii and penguins in Antarctica. She also studied Kittlitz's murrelets for 2 summers with the Kodiak National Wildlife Refuge. This presentation would be a Zoom presentation. Again, that's tomorrow at 6 p.m. To register, visit the Kodiak Audubon Society's Facebook page and click on the link. If you need more information, call Cindy Trussell at 486-2878. The Kodiak City Council will be having a regular council meeting tomorrow. That meeting will begin at 7:30 p.m. and being held in the Kodiak Public Library. In addition, the Kodiak City Council will be having a budget work session next Saturday. That's happening at 10 a.m. also in the library. Both meetings are open to the public, and the meetings will be web streamed, and the web streaming link and meeting packets are available at the Kodiak City of website. If you have any more information that you require, call the Kodiak City Clerk at 486-8636. You are invited to an open house at the Kodiak Fire Station next Tuesday, April 19th, from 5:30 to 7:30 p.m. to meet with the team from Wolf Architecture that will be designing the replacement for the 60-year-old facility. Come by and enjoy a warm beverage and a cookie while you learn more about this essential project and share your thoughts. You can be part of shaping the future of emergency response in Kodiak for the next 60 years. That's next Tuesday, April 19th, from 5:30 to 7:30 p.m. at the fire station downtown. Join them for refreshments and information and share your input. The Isle Bells will be having their 11th annual Spring Ring on Sunday, May 1st. That's happening at 3 p.m., $15 general admission, and it will be held at the Gerald C. Wilson Auditorium. And Waterhaul, a commercial fishing-themed art exhibit created by Homer artist Katie Bush and produced by the Kodiak Maritime Museum, can be viewed at the Kodiak Island Brewery through May of this year. Katie has fished her set net side to Ugashik Bay in Bristol Bay for decades, and the 11 pieces in the special show use objects and materials familiar to commercial fishermen to explore work, community loss, and the natural world. Call the Kodiak Maritime Museum for more information at 486-0384. And the Kodiak History Museum is relaunching their temporary exhibit program, and they're looking for proposals for future exhibits. If there's a story you don't think has been talked about enough or a topic or issue you'd like to see explored, they are accepting exhibit proposals for their new exhibit, which will be opening August 2022. Proposals may be submitted by May 1st. For more information or how to propose an exhibit, contact Lynn Walker. She's the curator at curator@kodiakhistorymuseum.org or visit the Kodiak History Museum's website at www.kodiakhistorymuseum.org.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT 3 times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m., during the Midday Report at 12:20, and in the evening at 7 o'clock. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.